In our investment universe presentation, the overview of the investment universe, we saw that there is a place for short-term investments, short-term vehicles, short-term instruments, usually just called cash. And that is when we need the money in the short term. And they're relatively straightforward for the vast majority of us. So we're going to take some time today and just go through them and get them out of the way. And know that you use these when you need the money to be safe, to be guaranteed, or pretty darn close. And in the investment world, we typically call that a year. Short term is a year or so. Although depending on the need, maybe it's a down payment on a house or something else very important. Maybe 2 years, maybe three, but at 1 year, usually 1 year. As we said, they're normally guaranteed or pretty darn close. And what does pretty darn close mean? Well, we'll get to that when we take a look at money market mutual funds and corporate paper and the others. These are typically incredibly liquid, meaning you can get your money within a day, just go to your broker, go online, log in, and have it move to your checking account, and the next day it'll be there. There's a very low risk of losing principal, basically no risk, hence very low return, very low reward. 2 to 5%, but as we've seen the last 10 years since the Great Recession, they were basically 0% or pretty darn close, maybe 0.01 or 0.1. And starting in 2015, the Fed started raising rates very slowly until last year, 2019, when they decided, it's time to lower them again. And this is where politics comes in. Poly means many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. So we'll discuss that later on. And as we said back in our presentation on the investment universe, overview of the investment universe, this is a place to park your money. And you'll also hear people say, I use short-term investments, short-term instruments, short-term vehicles for my emergency fund. And we'll discuss emergency funds very quickly. Today. Slide 56. There are basically two methods for earning interest. And the one, the stated rate of interest, is the most common form. This is the one we're used to. You put money in a savings account, they tell you you're going to get 1%. So say you put $100 in. After 1 year, you have $100, $101. You earn a dollar's worth of interest. Woohoo! But the other way is called the discount basis. And this is a little tricky. Some people have a little trouble with it. It's not really that hard once you take a look at it. But this is a method of earning interest on a security by purchasing it at a price below its redemption value. Huh? They'll tell you that this is a $100 instrument, $100 short-term instrument. But you don't pay $100 for it. You might pay $99 or $99.02 or whatever. And then after 1 year, you get your $100. You see, the difference is the interest earned. And since these are very liquid, meaning they are tradable very easily to other investors, they accrue their interest. So as the maturity date gets closer and closer and closer, you see the value rise until finally on the maturity date, it would be redeemed for $100. Does that make sense? So here's an example that we used in the presentation here. You purchase security now for $4,800, and in 9 months you redeem it for $5,000. Your interest would be $200. And you would be told what rate that is. Now, I don't know what it is. I have to calculate it, but what would that be? That would probably be around 3 or 4%, I guess. I'm not sure. I have to calculate it. But that's how it works. You'll be told what the interest rate is, but you'll buy the security for less than its maturity value. And as it gets closer and closer to maturity value, that is the price will go up, the value will go up, that's the interest you will earn, until finally when it's redeemed, it will be redeemed for face value. And we have a commentary presentation to go along with this that you'll take a look at eventually. Yes, yes, of course. Slide 57. What are the risks of short-term invest? Wait a minute, Payana. You told me these things are basically risk-free. Well, yes and no. The risk of default, the risk of losing money, is very low, or basically non-existent. Yes, it is, but we'll discuss that when we get to money market mutual funds and how it really isn't there, but it's there. In some of these, there is a risk that you could lose a tiny little bit of money, but you won't because the Federal Reserve Bank will come galloping into the rescue. But there are other risks. Oh, yes, no investment is totally risk-free. There's a risk of losing purchasing power. Very high, because short-term investments, as we saw in the overview of investment vehicles, the overview investment universe, and the previous presentation on risk versus reward, short-term investments barely keep up with inflation. And that means you can lose purchasing power. For example, if you're getting 1% at the bank, and the bank will be very happy to tell you how lucky you are if you're getting 1% these days, but inflation's running at about 2%, sure, your $100 became $101 after 1 year, but now it costs $102 to buy the same basket of goods that it did a year ago, you see? And then opportunity cost risk is very, very high. And what is opportunity cost? Well, it's a tricky subject, and you discuss it in detail in your economics class. But we'll take a look at it as we go along, and we'll see the opportunity costs of using your money in short-term investments when you have a long time horizon. Unless your time horizon is very short, there are many other investment alternatives, almost all of which will give you a better rate of return. But of course, they're going to have higher risk. Have you figured that one out yet? I sure hope so. Risk versus return, risk versus return, right. So the risk of opportunity, lost opportunity cost is very high. If you need the money in the short term, you got to put it in short-term investments. But if you don't need the money for 5, 10, 20 years or more, you're losing out. You're losing opportunity. And we'll have a really good example of this when we get to mutual funds in the next presentation. Repeat after me. There is no such thing. There is no such thing as a risk-free investment. Exactly. All investments have advantages. All investments have disadvantages. And all investments have some type of risk. Slide number 58. Now let's take a look at some of the types. Deposit accounts, passbook savings accounts. Well, most people just call them savings accounts, but some institutions still use that little passbook that looks kind of like a passport, especially for kids, because the child brings their savings to the bank and puts it in the bank, and they whips out their passbook savings book, and they stamp it. Oh, it looks so official. At credit unions, they're actually called share accounts legally, but everyone calls them savings accounts. And don't worry, they're basically the same thing. Legally, they're different, but to us, it's no difference. Now, checking accounts that pay interest are actually called negotiable order of withdrawal. Nobody uses that term. They just call them checking accounts that pay interest. And then banks and credit unions also have money market deposit accounts, which are different than money market mutual funds. They're very similar in what they invest in, but these are guaranteed. In fact, all of these are guaranteed by the federal government or an agency of the federal government up to $250,000. They provide the highest level of liquidity. You can write a check most of the time. Now, with your savings accounts, the bank, if you went to the bank and said, can I have my $70,000 in cash? They'd look at you funny and they'd say, Well, we'll write you a check, a cashier's check based on our bank or our credit union, but we really can't give you $70,000 of cash today. Can you come back tomorrow? And they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to legally say, come back tomorrow. And then they'll call up their headquarters and say, you know, we need $70,000, because they don't keep that much cash in the bank, unless it's a, you know, big downtown high traffic bank. They in the branch banks, they don't have that much cash. And then they'll call the FBI. Huh? Yeah, the banks and credit unions and brokerage firms, mutual funds, are all required to report suspicious activity. And some people say if it's over $10,000, over $5,000. No, there's no dollar amount. The bank, the credit union, has to decide whether this is a suspicious activity. Obviously, if you have somebody who's always carrying around cash, maybe they work for a marijuana institution, because they're not allowed to use banks, then they'll be used to that person carrying around a lot of cash. But if you just all of a sudden walked in and asked, or deposit, more importantly, if you deposited $70,000, then they'd really call the FBI. That's part of the Patriot Act. But you all knew that, didn't you? No? Oh, well, it's your government at work. It's only to find terrorists and drug dealers and many people who put their life savings in a jar somewhere. And then I've had a couple of folks come up to me and say, my mother won't put any money in the bank and she's got a ton of money and we don't know what to do. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to tell them. So I called the FBI, literally, and I talked to an FBI agent. And he said, look, we see this a lot. Don't be cute. Don't bring in $5,000 or $10,000 a day. Just bring the whole darn thing in and deposit it and be done with it. And I said, okay, you're the expert. And it's true, especially the Mexican culture, where they don't trust the banks. The banks are getting better. I think they're a lot better, in my humble opinion. But I didn't live through the 1980s. And then again in the 1990s, when the banks basically stole the money from their depositors. So that's why many of the people from Mexico don't trust their banks. Yeah. A lot of people in the United States don't trust their banks either. And there's a good reason. But no. They're not going to steal your money, folks. They're not going to steal your money. Well, they nickel and dime you. But is that stealing? I don't know. They'll just say, well, it's part of our fee structure, which you agreed to when you signed the account. Aha. Okay. Continue, Frank. All right. Now, what about savings bonds? You know, these are cute gifts for newborns. You buy it $50 and then a million years later, it's worth $100. But they're actually very cool. If you received one of these when you were a child from your aunt or your uncles or your grandparents, go find it now and cash it in. Because if you use it for higher education, you don't pay any federal income taxes. Now, you don't pay any state and local income taxes, but that's true of all federal interest, because the states can't tax the feds and the feds can't tax the states. So they work on that discount basis we talked about. You buy it for a lower amount, and then it accrues interest until finally it matures. And then afterwards, you really should turn it in, because I don't think some of them don't accrue afterwards. I don't know. I don't know too much about these things, because I don't deal with them. But some people love them. And, of course, they're guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States Treasury. And you're going to be doing a little bit of investigating into Treasury securities, because that's part of your assignment. TreasuryDirect.gov, very, very cool. Our government, when they do something good, we need to compliment them, because we love to complain when they do something stupid, which they do often. But this is cool, as we'll discuss in a bit here. The Series HH are being phased out, and I don't think you can purchase them anymore. But the Series I are becoming more popular, because some people, especially after the Great Recession, when the banks were flooded with reserves, meaning the new cash was created, new money was created, many people believed that inflation was right around the corner, hyperinflation. And it didn't turn out. The economists kept saying it's not going to turn out, because demand has fallen off a cliff. And it's only when demand is when is outstripping supply that we have inflation, but that some people were convinced, and it hasn't turned out yet. We'll see. These inflation index bonds are guaranteed to outpace inflation, but not by much, right? They really don't pay that very well. But again, they're free from taxes if you use them for higher education. And notice there's a maximum purchase amount. So this is part of what you're going to do a little bit of research on. You're going to take a look at treasurydirect.gov and familiarize yourselves with the different, the various short-term securities that you can buy at treasurydirect.gov. Very, very cool. Slide 61. Now, finally, treasury bills. This is the gold standard for short-term securities. In fact, we often use the three-month treasury bill. They're 1 month, 3 months, 6 months. We often use the three-month to describe what the current risk-free rate of return. And they are short-term securities that are sold on a discount basis, meaning you pay less for what they mature for. And they're free from state and local taxes because, again, the states can't tax the feds can't tax the states. But they're not free from federal income tax, even if you use them for higher education. Purchase directly at treasurydirect.gov. And this is a very cool thing. As we said, the Treasury has created this website. In fact, other countries, specifically Mexico, have copied it. Mexico, I had the opportunity to meet the gentleman who was the project director for CETES Direct, and there's a link on the class website, and I think in Canvas, yeah, to that website. And he basically said, we copied what the United States Treasury did. You know, we thought it was a good idea, so we copied it. So you're going to take a look at treasury bills, and we're going to ask you what are the current rates, and you got to look at auction results, it's usually called. They don't call, say, current rates, but as you nose around in treasurydirect.gov, listen to the assignment commentary, read the assignment, and then just play around on the website, and don't worry about being perfect. We want you to play around that website because it's actually a very good website. And it's also an example, a very good example of what we investors, prudent investors that are doing our research, need to do to familiarize ourselves with our potential investments. Now, we may decide to go with this company, this entity, whatever, or we may decide not to. But at least we are doing what is sometimes called our due diligence. We're not just blindly jumping into an investment because some guy on the, you know, gal on the television told us to, or our brother-in-law said, "Oh, we're go here," and you know, we're doing our research, which is important in my humble opinion, dear students. Now, CDs, certificates of deposits. These are basically fancy savings accounts. But what's the difference? You are telling the bank, the credit union, that you are going to hold the money with them for 7 days or 6 months or 2 years. I've seen it up to 5 years. Now, what are they going to do for you? They're going to give you a higher interest rate than their normal savings account. But what's the, you know, always a catch, right? If you need the money before the 3 months, 6 months, 2 years, whatever, and you take it out early, there's going to be a penalty for early withdrawal. Right. So it's a, you know, there's a plus and then there's a minus. And you are also locking the interest in. So if interest rates go down, you're locked in for the 2 years. But what if interest rates go up? You're locked in for the 2 years, which is why some CDs have what's called a bump provision. Doesn't that sound cute? Bump, a bump provision, which means after 6 months, you can bump it up to the current rate if interest rates have gone up. Now, you wouldn't want to bump it lower, right? You'd want to bump it higher. So some of them give you a once a year bump or whatever. It's a cute little thing to have. And again, these are insured to the same $250,000 per investor. And if some people really are that worried and they have a whole lot of money to put in, you can put $250,000 in one bank, $250,000 in another bank. And by the way, as we'll describe in the assignment for short-term investments, it doesn't matter where the bank is. As long as it's based in the United States and the United States territories, you're covered. It doesn't have to be in your state. Now, there are these interesting CDs that I've never indulged in, but I've seen them advertised. Brokered CDs. They're sold by brokerage firms. And they normally offer higher yields than typical CDs. And unlike CDs, you can sell them. You can basically redeem them before maturity without incurring a penalty. Now, why would they do this? Why would a bank or a credit union go to a brokerage firm and say, look, hey, we want you to sell our CDs? Because that bank or CD is hard up for money. They need some cash for whatever reason. Maybe they got some great opportunities to loan it out, or maybe they just had some bad loans and they need that cash to shore up their reserves. And so the brokers say, yeah, we'll take our commission for selling these things. And so check those out if you are so inclined. Now, careful, as it says at the bottom here, CDs will usually roll over automatically if you do not redeem them. So you get 2 hours from on Tuesday afternoon from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. No. They give you 2 weeks usually to roll them over. But you to redeem them before they automatically roll it over. But you can specify beforehand that you want the proceeds to be automatically rolled into your checking account or your savings account. But otherwise, you'll get another 2-year CD. And if you want to take the money out, there's going to be a penalty. So be careful about that, you CD fans. Slide 63. Now here's where it gets a little bit, what should I say, removed from the average retail investor. This is where it gets removed from us, the little people. Because when you enter the world of commercial paper, you're normally talking about mutual funds, other banks and other financial institutions such as life insurance companies, the invisible bankers. Why? Because notice that they're sold in multiples of $100,000. Yeah, I'll take two. No. Slide 63, we see that these commercial paper instruments are short-term unsecured promissory notes issued by corporations with very high credit standings. Some people call them IOUs. So if you're a large, well-known, bona fide, meaning real company, such as Home Depot or Union Bank or banks have their own kind of thing. But I'm just trying to think of some big companies like Walmart. Or I'm just thinking of retail companies, but you're Microsoft in the Intel world, or in the technology world, or you're Intel in the technology world, or whomever, a huge companies that we've all heard, most of these companies, which we'll deal with when we get to stocks. You can go to the investment world and say, look, I need a loan for 30 days or 90 days or 180 days or 270 days. And because you're not having that loan for more than a year or more, then you don't have to go to the Securities and Exchange Commission and register the security. So it's its own little world here. It's a big world, some $3 trillion worth at any one time, but you don't have to go through the process of registering the security, which you would with a stock or a bond or something else that's more longer term. And so they're very, very liquid, because you know you're going to get your money back in 90 days, and the world won't just lend to anybody. You know, you have to be a bona fide, serious company. And why would you do this? Why wouldn't you just go to a bank? Well, you're going to get a better rate. That's right. You're going to get a better rate than if you're the person, the company that's borrowing the money, than if you go to a bank or a credit union. While credit unions don't usually deal with multinational corporations that need millions of dollars, so that's where they get their short-term investments. That's where they get their short-term loans. I'm sorry, short-term loans. And for you, if you have a few hundred thousand dollars to invest, you too can buy commercial paper. And as we say in the assignment, we're going to ask you as a bonus to look up one of these commercial paper. And you know, it's not easy. It's not readily available on the Infernal Net. And why is that? Well, as we said, most people who invest in these things are very, very wealthy or work for an entity that has tons of money to invest. And so if you can walk into your local brokerage firm, especially if you have blue jeans and a t-shirt on, and ask for a quote on a commercial paper for General Electric, or their eyes are going to widen. They're going to think, oh, this guy's a gal's a million, multi-millionaire. And then when they learn you're doing it for an introduction to investment class at a local community college, they'll kind of go, oh, get out of here. So it's a bonus question. That's why it's a bonus question. But some companies actually do publish their own, what their current commercial papers is paying right now. So you can do it out there. But as we said, it's not too much for us. And their cousins on slide 64 are bankers' acceptance notes. These are, again, short-term, low-risk investment vehicles, but they are arising from bank guarantees of business transactions. Huh? Well, if you're not quite a General Electric or a Home Depot, if you're not quite a Nike or a very large AT&T, a very large company, you really can't enter the world of corporate paper. No one's going to touch your paper. So you go to your bank and you say, look, we need $120 million over the next 90 days because we're going to be buying a ton of materials from this company or from this country or from whatever. And so what the bank will do is they will issue these banker's acceptance notes based on the bank, right? It's not based on the company, although the bank has done their due diligence. The bank has said, oh yeah, no, we think you're going to pay. And so they lend the money essentially to the individual by issuing these banker's acceptance notes. So they work the same way. They're sold at a discount. And they're typically a little bit less in the commercial paper because the bank is, you know, the bank, when you grow up, you want to be a bank, right? They're guaranteed. And they're shorter term usually, but, you know, 30 day, 90 days. But as with commercial paper, the minimum denomination is $100,000. So you and I are not going to run down to our brokerage firm and buy these things. Maybe you will. I don't know. So cool. So they're cousins of corporate paper. And again, they're going to be a little difficult to find. Go look it for you. Have fun and enjoy it. I hope you do. And maybe you'll find some banker's acceptance notes out there. Okay, where you will find them, but it'll be too late because by the time you read it, they'll be already have matured, is when you are looking at the money market mutual fund annual report or the stock mutual fund annual report or the bond mutual fund annual report in chapter 4, because mutual funds have tons of money to invest, and sometimes they need money in the short term, not much, you know, 2 or 3% of their total, sometimes a little bit more of their total monetary amount that's in the mutual fund. And so they will buy commercial paper. They will buy bankers' acceptance notes, you know, realizing that it's just for 90 days or whatever. Cool. Okay. Slide number 65. So finally, we get to, I've been mentioning these things, money market mutual funds. We said in our investment overview that a mutual fund is a pool of capital, a pool of money. And a money market mutual fund is simply a mutual fund that invests in short-term securities. So let's read the definition carefully here. A mutual fund that pools the capital of a large number of investors and uses it to invest exclusively in short-term securities. So unlike a stock mutual fund or a bond mutual fund, where there's going to be times you're going to lose money. I mean, just get used to it. I mean, you can get a cut. We're going to learn how to do that, how to deal with our emotions. But a money market mutual fund is not going to lose money. Well, maybe. Oh, no, it's not. Hang on a minute. Just hold on. Virtually all brokerage firms, mutual fund companies offer them, but unlike those money market deposit accounts at the banks or the credit unions, they're not guaranteed. So they can lose money. But again, it just is not allowed. As we said, they're virtually risk-free. What happens is they lose a penny. Literally, it's called breaking the buck. And if you just type into any search engine, breaking the buck, and you're so inclined to do so, research the very few times when a few mutual funds, money market mutual funds, or just we just call them money markets, have lost a penny. The whole world stands up and turns around and goes, "What?" And so what the company does is they go to the regulators, they go to the government and say, "Oops, we goofed." And they will ask, "Can we take money out of our own pockets and put it into the pockets of our into our money market mutual fund or investors?" That's never allowed. You're never allowed to commingle your firm's money, the brokerage firm's money, the mutual fund company's money with your investors' money. But in this case, we'll make an exception. And if they can't do it, other companies will step in and bail out the investors, of course, with the blessing from the governmental regulators. And in the case of the Great Recession, there was one company that had two money market mutual funds that broke the buck over the Lehman Brothers. You might have heard of Lehman Brothers going bankrupt. They had some of these short-term securities from Lehman Brothers, and Lehman Brothers went bankrupt. So, sorry, we're not going to pay you. And so two of them at the same time, one lost a penny, one lost 3 pennies. I mean, that one was really badly managed. And the whole world, this was September 2008, folks. I don't know if you remember. Some of you were much younger at the time. I was younger at the time. And oh my goodness, did the organic matter hit the ventilating device? And what happened? The Federal Reserve Bank came rushing to the rescue and said, "Relax," because what were they afraid of? They were afraid of people going to their money market and say, "Give me my cash, give it to me now, I'm putting it in the bank." And we're talking $3 trillion worth of this stuff going. Yeah. So the Federal Reserve Bank came rushing in and said, "Look, we will backstop all money market mutual funds for the next 6 months." And of course, the next 6 months were horror show. They were they were a terrible time, and where we were looking at the abyss. And we'll discuss it more in detail as we go along. And you can read dozens of very good stories about what happened and accounts on the internet or in very good books. And then 6 months later, the worst had passed, but people were still terrified. And they did it for another 6 months until September 2010, in which case, by that time, people realized, no, the money markets are safe. They're not going to go under. Yeah, so it nothing's perfect. Nothing we humans have ever created is perfect, and that includes the capital markets. That includes the investment universe. I mean, we do the best we can, and there are some bad apples out there, folks. But the vast majority of people working in the industry don't want that to happen, certainly. And there were a couple people who actually bet on it to happen, and a few of them did very, very well. One of my best friends bet on it to happen, but he was too soon. He thought the whole thing was going to come crumbling down. He was too soon, and he got clobbered. So, as we said, virtually all of these have check writing privileges to transfer direct to and from your checking account. So they're very, very convenient. And what kind of return can you get? Well, they'll give you a better return than the savings account, certainly. And it's usually a little bit less than CDs, but what's the difference? The money market mutual fund rate goes up and down every day, unlike CDs, which are locked in. So, slide 66. Which short-term investment is for me? Well, commercial paper, banker's acceptance notes are usually only suitable for institutional investors. Savings bonds make cute gifts for newborns. Many investors do purchase treasury bills directly from the treasury. TreasuryDirect.gov, you, dear students, get the same price that the big boys and girls on Wall Street get. And I guess CDs are okay for those that are sure that they will not need the money until maturity. I have a very good friend who that's all she will put her money in is CDs. She does not trust the stock market. She doesn't trust bonds. She loves CDs. And so I interviewed her. So check that out. And then money market mutual funds, money market deposit accounts, I believe are the preferred choice for most investors. For short-term investments, that's what I use, but that doesn't mean that's what you use. That's just what I do because it's just so easy. Money mutual funds are very easy, and money market mutual funds are very easy. Most non-investors, in my humble opinion, still use a passbook savings account from a bank because they haven't taken this course yet. And you come across somebody who has $500,000 sitting in a savings account, and what do you do? You offer to show them this class and say, look, you know, if this is your money for retirement, you're going to do a whole lot better. But some people are just too terrified. They're too terrified to put their money anywhere else but where it is guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. And that is their decision. You can't make it for them. But hopefully with education, intellectual and emotional, remember the emotional part of investing, they can do a whole lot better, in my humble opinion, unless the world ends, and then it doesn't matter where your money is. Yeah, it does. Slide 67, the emergency fund. You know, many financial experts recommend that households create an emergency fund of 3, 6, or even 9 months of income, and I think this is a little over the top. But everyone's different, you know. There's usually some way through line of credit, home equity line of credit, credit cards if necessary for you to deal with an emergency where you can do a whole lot better than keeping $25,000, $50,000 or more or more in a savings account. And some savings accounts are still earning 0.1%. I don't know how they get away with it. Instead, my humble opinion, use the money to pay down high interest debt, especially credit card debt. You are adequately insured, right? Now, there are exceptions. Salespeople, self-employed, those who get laid off often, oh boy, do they need an emergency fund. Right, exactly, because they're used to getting a high salary while everything is good, interest rates are low, and houses are selling. All of a sudden, interest rates go up, and houses don't sell, so the real estate agents then go, what am I going to do? People are buying cars, and there's a recession, and now cars aren't selling. Yeah, so there are some people who definitely need that emergency fund. But for the vast majority of us, in my humble opinion, as long as you have a pretty good idea that you are marketable skill, you can get another job if you were to be laid off, I'm not a big fan. But everybody's different, right? And we discussed this in the Business 121 Financial Planning and Money Management class also. Now, slide 68. Here we in the face-to-face class have these ABCD cards that we hold up and at San Diego State. They have a little button you press and it shows up on the screen and it's very, very cool, but we don't have that budget. Anyway, we spared no expense and made these little cards. So we ask you, what is a mutual fund that pools the capital of a large number of investors and uses it to invest exclusively in short-term securities? Commercial paper, money market mutual funds, passbook savings accounts, CDs. Yes, it is money market mutual funds. And as we said, usually people just use the term money market. The mutual fund disappears. Money market mutual funds and their counterparts at banks, the money market demand accounts, money market accounts, have rates that are close to CDs, but without the early withdrawal penalty. So, and they're just so easy. They're like a checking account. They're meant to look like a checking account. They do. They look like a checking account, and that's they're not a checking account, folks. But they look like one, and they're just very easy. Slide 69. What are savings instruments in which funds must remain on deposit for a specified period? There is normally a penalty for early withdrawal. What are they? Commercial paper, money market mutual funds, passbook savings accounts, or CDs, certificates of deposits? Yes, certificates of deposits. And if interest rates are going down, cool, and you don't need the money in 6 months or a year, you can lock in a good rate. But you better hope you don't need the money until the CD matures. And the penalty's not that. I mean, it's not the end of the world. But your money is locked in. Slide 70. What are short-term unsecured promissory notes, IOUs, issued by corporations with very high credit standing, normally sold in $100,000 denominations, commercial paper, money market mutual funds, passbook savings accounts, CDs, certificates of deposits? These are commercial paper. Commercial paper and their cousins, bankers' acceptance notes, are normally only purchased by institutional investors, such as money market mutual funds. Right, exactly. And then a guaranteed demand account at a bank or credit union that normally pays a little interest, but will often be offered with a toaster or a waffle iron, which makes it all worthwhile. Yeah, that's your savings account. No comment. See, if that person really has $500,000 in a savings account, that banker is licking their chops. Because what are they doing with that money? They're turning it around and lending it out at 18% to people with credit cards. Yes. Oh, my. We're happy with 8 or 9%. The banks are getting 22% or 18 or 19% on credit. Yeah, well, that's a whole different world. Anyway, slide 72. You know, your economics class will go into this in much more detail. I am making this incredibly simplified and glossing over the mechanism by which it works. But who controls short-term rates? Well, the bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, the Bankers Bank, as it's sometimes called. They are in charge of short-term interest rates and the money supply. And the Federal Reserve chairperson is often described as the second most powerful person in the United States. The president is the commander-in-chief and obviously commands the military, so they're obviously the most powerful person. But the Federal Reserve chairman, and remember, it's a chair, it's a committee, so they're not alone, but they're usually, they're calling the shots with the people on the committee. They are responsible for the money supply. They are responsible for short-term rates. Now, as we'll learn, long-term rates are set by the marketplace. They're set by people's buying and selling of bonds, and we'll get to that much later on. But the Federal Reserve Bank, which was created over 100 years ago now, has two objectives. Keep people employed, full employment, and also keep inflation in check. Now these two objectives are often at odds with one another. What does that mean? Well, full employment often, but lately it just hasn't been happening like as people normally thought it would. Full employment typically will induce inflation. Right, exactly. You'll have people employed, and then there's not a whole lot of more people to fill the jobs that are needed. So the employers are going to have to raise wages. Raising wages gives more people and money, and then they go out and they buy more things, and that creates the price inflation. So that is what happened in the past, and that was most economists say that's what happens. But it hasn't happened in the last 10 years since the Great Recession. I mean, we're down to 3.5% now, and yet inflation is really not there. But people then yell out, you say, what are you talking about? Inflation's real. Look what's happened to rents in San Diego. Well, that's a different issue. That's a supply and demand imbalance, right? And then keeping inflation in check is often when they do that, they raise short-term interest rates to keep inflation in check. If inflation gets too hot, as they say, they use the term hot and cold and coolish, and then that clobbers employment because that lowers economic output and means people are not employed. So these two are at odds with one another. And so it's a difficult job. Don't let anybody tell you that the Fed is crooked, that they're criminals, banksters, whatever. They have a very difficult job. And you know what? They don't always do it right. And you go look in the past and you say, yeah, they really screwed up. But that's the problem with the future. It's hard to predict the future, especially when you're looking at the data that you're looking at. But some people call it or liken it to driving by looking in the rearview mirror. You just don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes they do mess up, but sometimes they get it right. The Fed was designed to be independent and not subject to political pressures. But again, nothing's perfect. And throughout time, politics has interrupted the Fed's daily duties or their yearly duties or their duties. And specifically since Agent Orange, I'm sorry, whatever the guy's name is, has taken over, he has literally jumped in and screamed and hollered at the Fed and told them how horrible they did. And it's ugly. It's polytics, many ticks, blood-sucking insects. But if you are so inclined, or take an economics class, or just start reading about the history of the Federal Reserve Bank and how, you know, what the job, they have their own website, which has some actually pretty good materials on it, mostly designed for high school or junior high, but they're actually pretty good to read. I read them, what can I say? And realize that ain't nothing perfect. They do the best they can. These are people who are, in my humble opinion, dedicated. They're not always right, and that's because they're humans. But they've done the best they can. And folks, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. 10 years ago, 11 years ago, in the Great Recession, we could have had another depression. We could have had a horrible, horrible failure of our economic system. And I have to applaud Mr. Bernanke and then Janet Yellen and now Jerome Powell. They've guided us through this this very difficult time. Now, does that mean, what have you done for me lately? Does that mean tomorrow's going to be a better day? Well, we'll do the best we can, right? Get your pants on, go to work, and produce and consume, and let's hope that the world is better tomorrow than it was today. But they ain't no guarantees. Okay, so much for that. Slide number 73. And that, dear students, we come to the close of our chapter one, our overview of the investment universe, the history of risk versus return, and short-term investments. Next chapter coming up is mutual funds, investments for the masses. And like it or not, dear students, you are probably going to be investing in mutual funds simply because you have a job. See you in our next chapter.